We moved to the stack of letters. They were from our father, addressed to various universities in the States. There were more than 30 of them, to the presidents of Morgan State, Santa Barbara Junior College, San Francisco State. "Dear President Calhoun," one letter began, "I have heard of your college from Mrs. Helen Roberts of Palo Alto, California, who is now in Nairobi here. Mrs. Roberts, knowing how much desirous I am to further my studies in the United States of America, has asked me to apply to your esteemed college for admission. I shall therefore be very much pleased if you will kindly forward to me your application form and information regarding the possibility of such scholarships as you may be aware of." Attached to several letters were recommendations from Miss Elizabeth Mooney, a literacy specialist from Maryland. "It is not possible to obtain Mr. Obama's school transcripts," she wrote, "since he has been out of school for some years." However, Miss Mooney expressed confidence in our father's talents, noting that she had observed him making use of algebra and geometry. She added that there was a great need in Kenya for capable and dedicated teachers, and that, given Mr. Obama's desire to be of service to his country, he should be given a chance, perhaps on a one-year basis. This was it, I thought to myself. My inheritance. I rearranged the letters in a neat stack and set them under the registry book. Then I went out into the backyard. Standing before the two graves, I felt everything around me, the cornfields, the mango tree, the sky, closing in, until I was left only with a series of mental images, Granny's stories come to life. I see my grandfather, standing before his father's hut, a wiry, grim-faced boy, almost ridiculous in his oversized trousers and his buttonless shirt. I watch his father turn away from him and hear his brother's laugh. I feel the heat pour down his brow, the knots forming in his limbs, the sudden jump in his heart. And as his figure turns and starts back down the road of red earth, I know that for him the path of his life is now altered irreversibly, completely. He will have to reinvent himself in this arid, solitary place. Through force of will, he will create a life out of the scraps of an unknown world, and the memories of a world rendered obsolete. And yet, as he sits alone in a freshly scrubbed hut, an old man now with milky eyes, I know that he still hears his father and brothers laughing behind him. He still hears the clipped voice of a British captain, explaining for the third and last time the correct proportion of tonic to gin. The nerves of the old man's neck tighten, the rage builds, he grabs a stick to hit at something, anything, until finally his grip weakens, with the realization that for all the power in his hands and the force of his will, the laughter, the rebukes, will outlast him. His body goes slack in the chair. He knows he will not outlive a mocking fate. He waits to die, alone. The picture fades, replaced by the image of a 9-year-old boy, my father. He's hungry, tired, clinging to his sister's hand, searching for the mother he's lost. The hunger is too much for him, the exhaustion too great, until finally the slender line that holds him to his mother snaps, sending her image to float down, down into the emptiness. The boy starts to cry. He shakes off his sister's hand. He wants to go home, he shouts, back to his father's house. He will find a new mother. He will lose himself in games and learn the power of his mind. But he won't forget the desperation of that day. 12 years later, at his narrow desk, he will glance up from a stack of forms toward the restless sky and feel that same panic return. He too will have to invent himself. His boss is out of the office. He sets the forms aside and from an old file cabinet pulls out a list of addresses. He yanks the typewriter toward him and begins to type, letter after letter after letter, typing the envelopes, sealing the letters like messages in bottles that will drop through a post office slot into a vast ocean, and perhaps allow him to escape the island of his father's shame. How lucky he must have felt when his ship came sailing in. He must have known, when that letter came from Hawaii, that he had been chosen after all, that he possessed the grace of his name, the baraka, the blessings of God. With the degree, the ascot, the American wife, the car, the words, the figures, the wallet, the proper proportion of tonic to gin, the polish, the panache, the entire thing seamless and natural, without the cobbled-together, haphazard quality of an earlier time, what could stand in his way? He had almost succeeded. in a way his own father could never have hoped for. And then, after seeming to travel so far, to discover that he had not escaped after all, to discover that he remained trapped on his father's island with its fissures of anger and doubt and defeat, the emotions still visible beneath the surface, hot and molten and alive like a wicked yawning mouth, and his mother gone, gone away.